Hi, folks. Galen Clavio here. Welcome to the Bracket Racket. We're back once again as we bring you at least an hour of college hoops talk here as we have a lot to cover from the past weekend. And really excited about some of the things we have to discuss, some really good games the last few days. And we'll be delving into those as well as giving you the previews for the upcoming contests here over the next few days. Joining me on the show, we have our traditional group of panelists on the Bracket Racket. First off, joining us from his couch, David Griggs. David, how are things?
Oh, things are great. Things often are great when you live in the world that I live in.
In what world do you live in? Is it filled with cinnamon?
It may be. You know the world you live in?
What's that?
It's nothing like that.
Okay. I was quite fascinated. You posted on my Facebook wall earlier that you were apparently supposed to be in the Disney animated version of Robin Hood when you were younger, and that didn't happen. What happened with that?
Well, it was what they called, I think, behavior not conducive to the Disney
You're,
I just don't understand like what their problem was.
You did say you were partying with Tara Reid a lot, so that might have something to do with it.
Not on the Disney movie though.
we got Kyle Lamb joining us as well. Kyle, what's going on?
You know, I'm inspired by the crowd today at Iowa State. So as a result, I'm going to challenge David Griggs to an arm wrestling match, which should be an interesting.
Any arms.
That's exactly my point. It's going to be an interesting given your stature. But I want you guys, the crowd, to chant overrated and at David. And then when I win, I want you to all storm the floor. Because, obviously it makes a whole lot of sense that we're going to storm the floor for beating an overrated opponent. But
they're a top 10 team. I don't understand. I understand the idea that you don't storm the floor unnecessarily, without question. But, I mean, look, as I said on the email chain, it's Ames, Iowa. That is literally the most exciting thing that's going to happen there all year. And B, it was a good win. I mean, it was a win against a team that was in the national. They were in the national title game last year.
It was a good win, but you know what? It's November 17th, and they were favored. That's the thing. They were actually the team expected to win this game.
This falls within acceptable court storming. If it's a top 10 team,
you've been saying Michigan's overrated. They were chanting it with 5 minutes to go, and yet they still didn't.
Can we just say that the court storming was because they were celebrating the proof that Mitch McGarry shouldn't have been a preseason All-American? Can we all settle on that?
I'll agree to that, and I will say they got themselves a little bit of respect back when they were singing Sweet Caroline afterwards, so it made it all worthwhile.
Yeah. It's anyway, Lee Delvecchio also joining us. Lee, how are things with you?
Lee Delvecchio appears to be on mute.
Hey, speak up. Can't you?
Lee, are you there? We can't hear you. Well, we'll come back to Lee in
a
second.
Come on, Bear.
Lee, just chime in anytime your microphone starts working. We'll come back to you in a second. Anyway.
That's a dangerous invitation.
It is. So let's talk about the games that we've seen over the last 3 days, guys, and some of the trends and things that are. Are you there? We can hear you now, Lee.
Yeah, it defaulted to mute. But the computer refused to let me make my snarky Boston College scouting comment that I was going to open with. things are going well here. I haven't had tornadoes pass me on both sides today, so I'm already having a better day than Galen, apparently.
Yeah, it's been pretty wild here in Indiana. We had tornadoes all over the place. We got lucky here where I live in Bloomington. A lot of places not quite as lucky here and in Illinois. So our thoughts and prayers out to everybody involved and affected by that. But yes, no complaints as far as I'm concerned here. We didn't even lose power. So anyway, let's go ahead and check in on some of these games from the last week. A lot to talk about, guys. And Kyle, I'm going to throw it to you first. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about that Michigan-Iowa State game since we were just discussing it. Iowa State in this contest really did, I thought, a good job of limiting Mitch McGarry, obviously, and that played a role, but they really just kind of played their own game, and I think Michigan, overrated as they might be, this is still a very talented team, And yet, Iowa State was in the game the whole time. I mean, they took control, I think, a little bit towards the end there. And this is obviously a very good harbinger for an Iowa State team that we were kind of unsure about as far as their tournament prospects. But, you know, what does it say to you about Michigan as a whole, particularly when you compare them to what we've seen from some of the other top-tier Big Ten teams so far this season?
You know, it's kind of funny because we've been talking on this show for the last couple of weeks about how Michigan may not be, you know, good enough to justify their rating yet. And, you know, I've been convinced that they were – I don't know if overrated is the right term because that gets thrown around so much, but I kind of thought maybe they were overrated at this point in the season. And it's funny because they go out and they lose this game on the road by 7, and I actually came away thinking that they were pretty good. But I thought that they played well in stretches, but, you know, one of the issues I took away from this team is they've certainly got talent. One thing I'm concerned about, though, is they are too reliant on the three-pointer. At least last year when they got in those stretches, Trey Burke could take over a game and get to the rim and kind of dictate it a little bit. They don't have a Trey Burke this year, and I thought that they were way too willing to settle for any open three that they got rather than, you know, if they had pounded the ball into McGarry a little more often or got the ball into the paint and kicked it out, I thought that they would have had a lot more success, and they were having success when they were doing that. But I think when Iowa State made their run and got back and took the lead for the final time, it was because Michigan just started settling for too many jumpers.
That's what Michigan does.
They do. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, they're always – I agree with Kyle that they're too reliant on the three, but they're always too reliant on the three. I mean, I'm drawing a name. I'm drawing a blank when I'm trying to come up with the coach's name.
John Beilein?
Yeah, Beilein. But that's how he was at Michigan State as well.
You mean at West Virginia?
Yeah, West Virginia. I don't know why I keep drawing blanks on that. I mean, I
there you go. That's why you keep drawing blanks. Cut that out. Lee, any reflections off that game that you have to share with us?
For me, it was how great Melvin Ejim was. Especially, we talked about Mitch McGarry. Definitely isn't a preseason All-American. Part of the reason is because Melvin Ejim absolutely dominated inside for Iowa State. I was impressed. You know, I'm interested to see how long they can keep him on the bench, because if you combine him with Hogan, George's Niang, all of a sudden Iowa State might have one of the best front courts in the country. If they can get that out of even half of that out of Egypt on a regular basis, they could really be a threat in the Big 12 in the non-Kansas division. And I was more impressed by Iowa State than really thought, oh man, there's something wrong with Michigan. I thought they were just great today. They got out rebounded by one, but I really thought Iowa State played much better inside, especially down the stretch. They were able to really attack the low block with Niang down the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game, you know, get higher percentage shots than Michigan, who obviously, I mean, they had a lot of open looks from three, but, you know, it's still a harder shot, and that bore true today.
Lee, let me keep it with you. I want to start the conversation on Belmont, North Carolina. Now, this was obviously a game that, you know, people who watch basketball a lot, you know, were looking at, and they were saying, maybe there's a chance here at an upset, but North Carolina had this game in their hands and basically just blew it down the stretch, and credit to Belmont, really, for stepping up and doing what they needed to do to win the game at the end.
Well, I mean, Belmont actually ran out to a dominant lead in the first half. The thing was, the fouls were so – the disparity was so drastic, but at the end of the day, it bore North Carolina absolutely no advantage. The Tar Heels finished 22 of 48 at the free throw line, which is – God, I don't even know how you can be that bad without serious questions about legitimacy coming up. JP Takoto, 4 of 16 at the line. It's just terrible. It got to a point where Belmont almost, if they weren't down 8 with 4 to play, they could have basically just fouled North Carolina on possessions and had a better chance of giving up less than a point per possession. But Belmont, you know, they have a big lead. North Carolina makes the run in the second half. You think, oh, well, you know, Belmont, good team, but eventually North Carolina's supposed talent advantage will come to fruit. And then, despite having an 8-point lead with 4 minutes to go, North Carolina could not close out Belmont. And, the big shot in the game, of course, is that J.J. Mann, with 15 seconds left, hits a three for Belmont to give them an 81-80 lead. They come down the other end, and North Carolina feeds it to J.P. Takoto, because If there's anybody you want to give the ball to down one inside of 10 seconds left, it's a guy who shot 4 of 16 at the free throw line. Belmont hacks the living hell out of him thinking, why not? They actually get a clean steal out of it, and Caleb Chauve made the layup on the other end to ice it and get Belmont an 83-80 win. Belmont, it's really more about them, I want to say, than North Carolina, just because this is a team that, you know, all of us, the basketball nerds, we've loved them the last few years. We've loved them as NCAA tournament upset potential, and it hasn't really borne fruit. But Rick Byrne's done a phenomenal job there. This is a huge win for them as a program to get the sort of win that we were thinking they would get in an NCAA tournament. To get it in the non-conference season at North Carolina, I mean, North Carolina, as much as they struggled, they had not lost a non-conference home game in November in a very long time.
Yeah.
And now they turn around.
That's Rick Byrd, not Rick Barnes, for our audience.
Yeah, that's right.
They truly could not be more diametrically opposed. And right. Now this sets up a very tantalizing matchup in a couple weeks. Sunday, December 1st, Belmont hosts VCU in what has the potential to be the mid-major game of the year, with both teams having major road top 25 wins. I was incredibly impressed by Belmont. Their ability to score is, I mean, against North Carolina was really kind of shocking. And I have even more questions about North Carolina. I know they're missing a few players, but you can't shoot 22 of 48 at the line. It doesn't matter who you're missing. The missing players don't matter. You've got to be able to shoot 50%. Well, if they shoot 50%, they win the game.
I think it's interesting that the overall referee disparity or the call disparity that we saw in this game, Kyle, was really it was pretty intense. And you were mentioning this earlier. I mean, this is it's rare that you see a team like Belmont able to overcome that sort of a situation and be able to win.
It's the first time in the history of basketball, according to my exhaustive research, which you know spans all of a couple minutes, that an unranked team came in and beat a top 25 team, you know, having 26 fewer free throw attempts. It was just incredible. I mean, I think Belmont had, I want to say eight or they ended up with like eight guys picking up at least three fouls. And it was just, I mean, I give Byrd a lot of credit for managing this game with such foul disparity because, I mean, he had to be pinpoint on his rotations. And I mean, he just ran coaching circles around Roy Williams today. I mean, it was really impressive. But the officiating, yeah, I mean, 31 fouls called on Belmont. And it's just, they needed every single contribution they got from every single player on their bench. Cause it was, I mean, I honestly thought they were going to end up losing by double digits just because of the attrition and the fouls. But somehow, you know, even when they got down eight, they stuck to their game plan, got some open shots, and it was a really good performance.
Well, it's really amazing when you're able to shoot, 40% from three, and you hit 15 threes in the game. I mean, that is really remarkable. You get out rebounded by 15. A really good win by Belmont, and a really interesting week for them, David. As we saw them, you know, they lost to Richmond, they beat Indiana State after being up big in that game, and then they're able to go into Chapel Hill and pull off a victory here.
Yeah, it has, and you really got to start to look at this Belmont team because this is – they go to Richmond and lose. They were really outplayed in that game, and you're like, well, okay, maybe they just don't have it. But then they beat an Indiana State team who at the time didn't seem that notable. If anything, you're surprised that they didn't win more handily. But look at what Indiana State did today.
Hey, and hold on. Before you go on, I'd like an apology because I tried to point out Indiana State Notre Dame last week as a game to watch, and you dismissed it by saying you didn't think they were good enough. So,
well,
bring it.
I need to go back and edit that podcast.
Yeah.
Actually, Galen, I think this is more embarrassing for you that you want an apology from a puppet.
Well, I mean, you know,
a drunk puppet.
I mean, he's tipsy. He's not drunk at this stage. Anyway, David, go ahead.
And anyway, I would apologize, but why would I when I can just go back and edit that podcast? They beat North. Well, anyway, getting back to Belmont, they beat North Carolina today. They, you know, have VCU coming up. They go to Middle Tennessee, which may not be a tournament team, but still they're going to get some credit if they're able to win that on the road just because of how good Middle Tennessee is at home. They go to Denver, who's been disappointing. They go to Kentucky. That's probably way over their heads. And then they go back to Indiana State. So this is a team, and you don't see this often out of the Ohio Valley, although we have with Murray State. This is a team that might be in a position to not need to win the conference tournament. I mean, they might be way inside the bubble by March if they play like they did today.
If they beat VCU and win 14-plus in the Ohio Valley, I don't think we'll be worrying about them.
Guys, let's I'm going to head this off right at the pass. Okay, now this 4 straight years I have picked Belmont Bruins to pick pull off an upset in the first round. Do not get my hopes up on this team yet. It's just we're not going to do it.
I'm not talking about getting a win in the tournament. I'm talking about being a safe team to get in.
I know, but the more we hype Belmont, the more we start to like this team, the more I'm going to get burnt in March, and I just want to avoid it.
And I just want to say the thing, I wanted to make a joke, but I really can't because, I mean, Rick Burns, it's his 28th year at Belmont. He's 60. Yeah, anyway, that's it. Hey, Wake Forest, RICKBYRNE. This is the guy who should be coaching in the ACC, not some of the crap guys there. This guy has done a tremendous job at Belmont, and I'm happy for him, and I'm also upset to see that there are coaches making double the money of this guy playing just terrible basketball, and I hope he stays, because it would be awful if a school like Wake Forest came around and now decided to woo him when he's been doing it at this level of accomplishment for at least 5 or 6 years. Like, you passed over this guy to hire somebody awful. You don't get a second chance. But that said, I do think it would be interesting to see if this is maybe a Jim Larrañaga kind of move at the end of the year. Is it an older coach who people wonder if maybe he wants one shot at the big time in his later years? I don't think he's going anywhere, but I certainly think people will try.
Well, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on. But, no, I mean, he definitely has done an excellent job. He's definitely a very good coach. And hats off to them for the win that they picked up today in Chapel Hill.
Want to applaud Lee for that reference. I think Rick Bird would absolutely be a perfect fit for Wake. So I applaud Lee for thinking of that.
I think he's a much better fit at North Carolina State, but that's just me.
I do too. I mean, I think he'd be a great fit at either. I just wonder if at age 60, after 28 years at Belmont, if he suddenly is going to leave. By the way, folks watching us live, Big Ten Network, Purdue is up 2 with 30 seconds to go against the mighty Rider Bronx. You've also got Eastern Washington up 10 at Washington.
Yeah.
And Boston College fighting off Florida Atlantic on ESPNU. So it's a Schadenfreude Sunday.
Purdue's got a, like I said, 2-point lead, and Rider just fouled, so they're going to the line. We'll keep you posted on that as it goes.
Schadenfreude Sunday. If you want to see big conference teams have really bad losses, you've come to the right place.
That's right. Let's jump over to the game that we were kind of alluding to earlier, but Indiana State playing against Notre Dame today up at the Joyce, and Notre Dame was down early in this game. They stormed back. I think they actually took a lead early in the second half, and then Indiana State just started pouring in threes from outside. I mean, they shot very well. They played a really good game down the stretch. Every time Notre Dame closed the lead, Indiana State opened it up again, and David, they really walloped this Notre Dame squad. And I guess a similar question to the one I asked earlier, but with different teams, does this tell you more about Indiana State or more about Notre Dame?
I think it tells you a lot about both. Now, Notre Dame, they came into this game dead. The crowd was dead. The players were dead. They were going through the motions, fell behind early. I mean, out of the 40 minutes, they showed signs of life for maybe 5 of it when they came back in the second half, tied the game, and even got the lead. But then what was more impressive is that when Notre Dame appeared to have all the momentum, Indiana State just got back to business and then opened it wide up again. I mean, all the credit in the world to Indiana State, but Notre Dame was just dead. They were not ready to play this game, and Indiana State was. So if anything, I mean, I think what it tells us about Notre Dame is that they have the tendency to go brain dead. They have a high ceiling, but they're not always going to play up to it. Like, I get not being ready when the game starts, but how do you fall behind, get back into the game, and then go brain dead again?
Well, I mean, I had a takeaway from watching this. Well, two. First of all,
and I would like to just say that this was a game last week that I was big on watching.
Mm-hmm. You were, and seeing the ACC logo on like at the Pete.
Yeah, that was really
seeing it at Syracuse was kind of expected. Seeing at the Joyce Center was really weird. Yeah. Like that was legitimately jarring. But they live down to the ACC logo. As Notre Dame showed, they have a lot of questions on the inside, I think. This is a team that's very good from the line, but they do a very poor job of drawing free throws. And today, they go 15 of 20 at the line. Now Indiana State goes 16 of 17. But they end up even on the rebounds, despite the fact that Notre Dame got 17 offensive rebounds. It's, they don't get a lot of misses, and today Indiana State didn't give them a lot of options to pick them up. Notre Dame traditionally, or this year so far, they'd had not really a lot of issues defending the three, although that was against Miami of Ohio and Stetson. And now, again, with the way Mike Breese sets up these schedules at home, he finally get a tough test at home, and they look terrible. And if you look at the remaining out-of-conference schedule, at home they don't have anything that's really a test for them. They have the tough tests, at neutral sites with Indiana and Ohio State. But, at home, the rest of the way, it's cream puff city. Bryant is their best remaining home game before they play Duke on January 4th.
Well,
State was tough. Wait till they see Jabari Parker.
They have North Dakota State too at home. That might be a tougher game, but your point is taken nonetheless.
If they couldn't defend the three against Indiana State, then heaven help them against the Bison.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
I agree.
Inside, I have a lot of questions about Notre Dame. David said, they didn't look into it, and they didn't bring a lot of energy on the defensive end. On the offensive end, I thought they were all right, but defensively, it was a distinct lack of attempt at playing defense.
We need to get to the larger issues of the ACC in a second, but I wanted to hit a couple of games that happened the previous few days. Kyle, let me head to you. So the big game from yesterday, Ohio State, Marquette, this was a sluggish game, to say the least, in the first half, and then Marquette decided to come out and do a nice impression of the East Regional Final from last year, as they just completely forgot to shoot. Ohio State wins this game 52-35. Good win for Ohio State, good road win, but man, what happened in this game?
I think Lee summed it up best. I tell you, Marquette is going to have some problems this year in the backcourt. Their point guard play is absolutely atrocious, and Ohio State's two-headed point guard monster of Aaron Kraft and Shannon Scott just ate him alive. When you've got Todd Mayo forcing up 17 shots, making only four, you're in for a long night. And I think some of it is certainly due to Ohio State's defense. I mean, they're going to be probably as good as anybody defensively in the country this year. They're number one right now in KenPom defensive efficiency. I expect it to be 1, 2, or 3 all year. But I think the other part of it, too, is Marquette has just got backcourt problems. I mean, they've got a good front court, but Ohio State did everything they could. They ducked under screens, they packed it in, took away passing lanes, and just basically dared Marquette to shoot. And like you said, I think it's an apropos comparison because it was a carbon copy of the Syracuse, East Regional last year. It's just... Syracuse did the same thing. I mean, they packed their zone in. They let Marquette shoot, and Marquette just never shot out of it.
Right.
It's amazing. If you put this in perspective, Ohio State only went 5 of 15 from the free throw line, and they didn't get a single point out of their expected leading scorer, LaQuinton Ross, and still won by 17 in a place that had a 27-game home winning streak. So just really an odd game, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder how this Marquette team can succeed without kind of doing what Villanova did last year, where they're going to have to get to the free throw line a lot. Right now they're getting basically a third of their points are coming at the line right now, but they're a terrible three-point shooting team. The problem is they're not very good when they get to the line. They've scored so few points that's where they've gotten a third of them. And they get an insane amount of their shots blocked. Todd Mayo just looked clueless in this game. And as good as Aaron Kraft is and his numbers ended up good, I have to say he had a poor first half, and he did it against Todd Mayo. I think Kraft is really good, but his numbers are going to be really inflated by getting to play that disaster of a backcourt. Marquette was an abomination with the basketball.
They were real bad.
They missed a three-pointer by a yard at one point.
Yeah,
three, and it hit from the right wing and hit the left side of the backboard.
Yeah, they missed it by so much that had they been playing football, they wouldn't have even brought the chains out to measure.
Yeah, it was a bad miss. And
I'm really disappointed. I really thought Lee was going to use this as a referendum on the Big East, but he didn't even mention it.
It speaks for itself. No, I don't have expectations for him to be very good.
Let's do this. Let's just lead him down that path. Lee, Mercer 77, Seton Hall 74 in double overtime. Your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you something about this. The important thing for you to know is, Gail,
Mercer's
you don't
good.
Just go into University Center and think you're going to get a win. Mercer is Macon is a tough place to play. No, this was embarrassing. Everything about this game is absolutely embarrassing for the Big East. First of all, why is Seton Hall playing at Mercer in the first place? Let's start there. Second of all, it's usually not a good sign when your average offensive rating in a game that has overtime is about, 80. Some of these ratings, where do you want to start? Fuquan Edwin was good, but he placed 41 out of the 45 minutes for Seton Hall. He ends up scoring, 35 points. He had a great night himself, but he got no help. They had no other player in double digits. Sterling Gibbs was nowhere to be found in his 23 minutes on the court. He also had the issue with fouls. He ends up fouling out. Patrick Aouda fouls out. They can't stop the Langston Hall machine for Mercer. They finish with four players in double digits. Seton Hall goes 17 of 30 at the line. They shoot 5 of 20 from beyond the arc. And to be honest, Seton Hall is very lucky that this game even got to overtime.
Are you
thoroughly
surprised?
Outplayed.
I mean, Mercer is good. Seton Hall isn't. I mean, if anything, I expected Mercer to have an easier time. I was serious. I expected them to beat Texas. I felt that they blew it. It's not a game that they could have won had everything broken right. They should have been able to beat a mediocre Texas team on the road and didn't. And they should have had an easier time with a bad Seton Hall team. I mean, I'm not even surprised that Mercer won.
I mean, it was a game. It was a very sloppy game. There were 44 turnovers. A lot of
a
possessions.
Sloppy the A-Sun needs to get it together.
Yeah, it's terrible to watch because of the stream and the basketball. There were a lot of possessions, none of them very good for Seton Hall. They end up, they barely out-rebound. Mercer, I think, is good, and credit to them. But Seton Hall, everything about this game is just embarrassing. This kind of game, too, is why we won't get good teams playing at Belmont. Because you get crappy so-called major conference teams going to decent mid-major teams, losing and playing like crap, and the counter becomes, well, nobody's going to play there. Like, that's the other side of this. I feel for Mercer because now good luck getting anyone else in the Big East to go there. Now no one else will play there. And that doesn't help the sport at all. So it's a good win for Mercer in terms of this year, but I wonder if it hurts them long-term getting, DePaul or Marquette, or any other member of the Big East, which is completely interchangeable in worth as mediocre, to go there.
Quick breaking news on the subject of embarrassing. At halftime in Evanston, Illinois State 40, Northwestern 22.
Yeah, a little hangover from the West Coast trip, I think.
I may have to recant my Chris Collins statements from last year.
Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere. Also, just a note, Purdue did end up beating Rider, so sorry.
If you want something you can watch right now, folks, Eastern Washington is running Washington off the floor on the Pac-12 network.
Yeah, this Washington team has really disintegrated. It's fascinating to watch. I mean, they just had a nice basket there, and they're back within 9, but...
They got a terrible blow.
Can you see the television, Galen?
I can see the television.
Okay,
now.
That's good. Yes,
that's great.
I mean, what in Washington? Right in here's a sentence you hate saying. In Lorenzo Ramar's defense, they did suffer a really tough piece of news earlier this week with the injury in the front court, and that's going to really hurt them. They have nothing in the front court. It's a young team, and they obviously have a tough week ahead of them. Depending. It's not like any of the teams they played in, they're going to play in New York, which we'll get to later, have looked that great so far. But, I mean, if they lose to both 2K Sports Classic sub-regional teams, I think at that point Washington should not be allowed to go to Madison Square Garden.
They shouldn't.
They lost to Irvine, and if they lose by 10 to Eastern Washington, that's it. Find somebody else. Find Mercer, find Belmont. Somebody's going to New York.
Let's, Belmont, since they actually won. But North Carolina, well, that's a different tournament.
That's a different tournament. Yeah, that one doesn't count. Let's switch gears a little bit, guys, and let's talk a little bit about this situation that's starting to unfold as far as the you know the way the conferences are playing so far. Kyle, you've been focusing in on a couple of conferences and their overall performance. What stuck out to you as this young season has started to unfold?
Well, there's a lot of material there that I could go with, but I will say I you know, for all the hype the ACC got coming into the season, they have not been living up to it whatsoever. I mean, I think Duke is still legitimately a top three team, but after that, I mean, North Carolina's looked shaky. Syracuse has been hit or miss so far. You know, Notre Dame had the disappointing loss to Indiana State today. Not a bad loss, certainly, but it just, you know, it doesn't bode well. But you look at the bottom half of this league. I mean, after you get, you know, the top 5 to 7 are going to be solid teams. After that, there is a huge gap between everybody else. And, mm-hmm. and the thing is, I don't even think the top half of the ACC right now is looking as good as we thought it was going to be. So I think, you know, the ACC, I think, has 12 losses already, which is just, I don't think anybody saw that coming, you know, this early in the season.
Yeah, I don't think outside. I think Duke is excellent. I think Virginia is good, and Syracuse is good. After that, it's just a bunch of other mediocre teams at best. I mean, Notre Dame today, we've discussed. Maryland today. I mean, Maryland.
Atrocious.
Maryland. Maryland, we could safely say, is the second best team in the state of Maryland, because Coppin State goes cross country, wins at Oregon State last week, and Oregon State goes cross country into the Comcast Center and dispatches Maryland with not too much difficulty today.
Right. Well, Towson, I mean, I like that. They're probably not even...
That's a good point. Although Towson did not look good today. I would like to make the statement that right now, as constructed, Maryland is the third best team in the state of Maryland. Where Georgia Tech, I mean, come on. Clemson, not good. Florida State, not good. Boston College, tire fire. Miami, what's hotter than a tire fire? They're that. Virginia Tech, awful. This is a hysterically overrated conference. Yeah. It will be very good. It could be very good next year. Right now, it isn't. And it's not in the same realm as the Big East was in 2009 when they had three number one seeds and two teams in the Final Four.
You know,
the Big East, which is
Let me say this. The good news is that after today's performance by the Terrapins, President Obama was there to personally deliver Obamacare to the struggling and unhealthy Maryland club.
I don't think Obamacare can save them at this point. This is not a good-looking situation for them at all.
Take a look at the ratings, and again, and Ken Pomeroy made this point today on Twitter, like, the Big Ten is clearly the best conference in the country by
it is.
Watching basketball or metrics, and nobody wants to talk about it because people are so excited about the new ACC, and they and the media wants the new Big East to succeed so badly, despite any proof of what it actually is or what year this is, because people love the 80s and love talking about the high schools, their time in high school, because I don't see any other way you can say otherwise that the Big East isn't a top three in a best-case scenario conference this year. But it's not as good right now as the American is.
It really is a bad situation, because I mean, now you've combined the already very obvious biases that you find in most of the sports media towards the ACC with between Duke and North Carolina. I mean, and a lot of those writers, a lot of those television people went to school there. But now you've combined that with Syracuse, which produced the other half of sports journalists in the country, and so you would think that basketball didn't exist in these other conferences. And
Big Ten has looked awesome so far.
With absolutely.
With the slight exception of Michigan State on Friday night.
You know, everybody has a bad day now and again, but let's stop on that. Let me go over to David. The Atlantic 10 has kind of looked the opposite, though. They've had a very good start to the season.
Yeah, they have, and I mean, I think their overall record is 32-7. Now, a lot of those wins, I think it's way under the radar, because outside of VCU winning at Virginia, there isn't a whole lot to get that excited about in terms of brand names. But if you start to look at it a little more closely, you know, George Washington goes in and beats Manhattan, who appears to be a pretty good team, although maybe they don't have the brand name. Who else? Richmond had a win over Belmont, a decisive win a little earlier. That's looking pretty good now. St. Joe's, they didn't get the win, but they took a very good Creighton team to the wall the other night. UMass, again, they're kind of the opposite. They have brand name wins over mediocre to bad teams, like they've got LSU, Boston College, but they beat, you know, what was previously an unbeaten Youngstown State team today, and they look pretty good. So whereas there isn't anything that really is exciting on the surface, when you look below, this conference is getting it done. They're winning the games they're supposed to win, and they're beating decent teams.
Yeah, and that's something we weren't really expecting out of the A-10 this year. I don't think we knew what to expect, but it wasn't necessarily that.
Entering the day, Galen, under the radar, if my math sucks, the West Coast Conference is 31-3 on the year. Yeah. Gonzaga, BYU, and St. Mary's have all been very impressive.
They have.
Diego really hasn't played anybody, but they're off to a 4-0 start. I mean, for God's sakes, in stone dead last, look, Pepperdine stinks, but they are 3-0. Like, when your worst team is 3-0 and they've got to win over an MAC team, not a very good one in Western Michigan, I mean, the West Coast Conference could be a conference that is under the radar, a top 10 league this year.
I think it's impressive that, you know, you've got the West Coast Conference, those top three teams, and granted, the season's very young, but you've got three of the top 12 best offenses, if you're looking at efficiency, in the country right now. Gonzaga's sixth, BYU's 11th, St. Mary's is eighth. You've also got the fastest team in America right now in the BYU Cougars, averaging just a tick over 79 possessions a game. I'm all for that. I think that's an excellent sign. But yeah, they've been
the fastest team in the country in BYU, and you've got one of the slowest teams in the country in St. Mary's.
Yes, you do.
Well, St. Mary's, not many people have seen them yet, so I don't think they've really sunk in, but I have. They looked good against the good Louisiana Tech team. They blew out a pretty decent Akron team, and they beat a good North Dakota State team. They've looked good. Now, they haven't left campus yet, but, I mean, this is a good-looking team that no one has seen.
I also think it's worth noting that the American, you've got, eight undefeated teams or seven undefeated teams right now, and, you know, that includes, obviously, Louisville, who's looked very good in their three games. UConn's looked pretty good overall. You know, Memphis has only played one, but they've looked good generally. Cincinnati's 3-0. South Florida's 3-0. I mean, again, it's a lot of it comes down to what's your competition and so forth, but with what they've had at their disposal, that's been a pretty good start to that conference.
Yeah, it's actually been, so far, I mean, SMU, all the reports have been good. They've got the highly ranked recruiting class, but they've played very well in their games. Memphis, I think, was the last team in the country to play anybody, and they looked great playing a tomato can the other night. And so far, the AAC, you know, nobody wants to talk about it. It's all let's laugh at the conference, but so far, it's with no one talking about it, the teams have done very well. Cincinnati with a big win this week, you know, in terms of a conference v. conference argument win over NC State. And Cincinnati is the team that nobody talks about in the conference at all, and they're 3-0. I mean, nobody talks about them because they don't have a lot of possessions. They are 324th in the country.
Nobody talks about it because they haven't played anybody like usual.
Right.
Well, NC State is a name. I mean, they're not very good. But if we're talking about a team from the greatest conference ever conceived by man or machine, how they could get a win at home, my God, let's bump them from an 8 seed to a 6 right now.
I mean, on the positive with Cincinnati to keep in mind, I mean, yes, they haven't really played anybody per se yet. North Carolina State's at least a top 100 team, and they do have New Mexico, Xavier, and Pitt still coming on the schedule. So it's not as abjectly terrible as perhaps we've gotten used to in the past from Mick.
It's way better than what we're used to, but it's
the
still
one abject
not
problem for the American right now is the Temple is real bad. I mean, they've got serious issues, worse than I thought they would struggle this year. And you mentioned New Mexico real quick. One of the other teams to keep an eye on in the West Coast. San Diego's very quietly off to a good start. They have a game with New Mexico in the coming weeks.
I get it now. I was like, well, how does New Mexico get me back to the West Coast? I was unable to figure that
out. Being near it? No, they play San Diego in the coming weeks.
They're not really not near it at all.
Everything is over.
Maps.google.com, Lee.
Connecticut. Everything's over there. Okay. But no, if San Diego can even play well, forget win, if they just play well against New Mexico, that could be a real statement of the depth of the West Coast Conference this year.
Possibly. Let's move forward, guys. Unless there's, is there anything else from these past 4 days that you'd like to touch on before we finish off and look at the games coming up? Let me start with David, actually.
Sure. Conference USA is a tire fire.
Yes.
I think they should split the league in half, and then maybe they'll get two teams, maybe.
Go ahead.
Tire fires. Speaking of, I have no idea where I was going to go. I wanted to touch on Friday night real quick. I don't know if Kyle had any thoughts on Michigan State Columbia. I don't know how much of this you may have seen.
I saw most of it. I'll say this. I think this was a classic game where, you know, you come off a big win against Kentucky. You know you're going to be number one. And you just, I mean, they just didn't play particularly well, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but I didn't think it was any worse necessarily than the struggles that IU had against Long Island University, Brooklyn, on that Tuesday. You know, you look at the statistics for Michigan State, I mean, they didn't shoot well. Gary Harris, after an excellent game against Kentucky, he ended up with an offensive rating of 81. He only had 11 points in the game. Adrian Payne looked very good, but the rest of the team really didn't show up. And, you know, that I think that happens occasionally. They didn't shoot well from outside. They, you know, frankly, I think Columbia, you know, they were playing over their heads for most of the game, and we looked at the last few minutes and we said, oh, they gave the game away. I think the game finally just caught up with them. Like, I really think they were playing beyond their means, and they just couldn't sustain. Kyle, what were your thoughts?
I'm not going to hold it against Michigan State for having an oopsie-daisy. I'm more upset at the media for trying to make this out to be like, oh my gosh, you know. They
Rick Bozich, paging Rick Bozich. Sorry, go ahead.
They struggled with Columbia, so we should jump Louisville over them, even though they just beat the number one team in the country this week. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, and I'm struggling to get the logic. I don't think there is any logic, which is probably the issue in the first place, but... No, I mean, look, I think you said, I mean, I think part of it was just reality catching up with Columbia late in the game. I was just perplexed because as a coach, you're sitting there, you've got the shot clock right there in front of you. It's incomprehensible to me on two straight possessions to allow your team to not even look at the shot clock and not even get a shot off two straight times down the floor. I mean, if you're a coach...
I've actually watched a bit of Columbia the last couple of years. I really like Kyle Smith as a coach there. I mean, his style... They play incredibly slow, but I think he's done a really good job at a place that's historically, other than Dartmouth, the worst job in the Ivy League. And it shouldn't be. It's New York, but they've always been a special level of reprehensible other than a little bit of time under Joe Jones. And I think in the next 5 years, he'll get Columbia into a position where they can maybe win the Ivy League. But, yeah, those last couple possessions, you'd think Ivy League kids really could count to 35. But the Izzone completely threw them off. And obviously everyone wants the upset, but I've been really impressed by the job that Columbia has done under Kyle Smith. And they fell apart in games last year. That was their problem in Ivy League play. And it happened again on a much bigger stage. But speaking of falling apart, real quick, we knew that the Colonial was not going to be the same with all of conference realignment. Galen, it's really bad.
It's really not good at all, absolutely. I mean, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, specifically Delaware. I mean, this is a team under Monty Ross, an experienced team. Some expectations that maybe in a worse Colonial they make the leap, and they've made the leap off the cliff into the canyon.
You're not inspired by home losses to Charleston Southern? What's wrong?
Or a road loss against Richmond. They've been a mess. They're getting killed on the offensive boards. I'll pull up today. They played Hampton at home. I haven't pulled up the score, but if the Colonial wants to be a top 15 conference and not worse than the Ivy League in KenPom, they've got to get a team besides Towson. Towson. Oh, Villanova just beat the living crap out of Towson. Yeah, a team I really like.
Right now, there's only two Colonial teams that have a 500 record or better, and that's not a good look for them at all.
Two teams that could be actually decent in the league are Delaware, who played an even second half with Hampton today, but won by 11, and Towson, who followed up a very impressive home win in their new arena over Temple by losing 78-44 to Villanova today. So the
and the game wasn't as close as the score probably indicated.
Yeah. Kyle, before we move forward, anything you'd like to zero in on from the last few days?
Yeah, I just had one thought. I just want to say, and it's the jury's still out. I'm not jumping on the bandwagon like I have with Nebraska, but I do actually want to say I mentioned last week I was pretty impressed with Minnesota's first couple of games, and they went on the road and played a really good game against Richmond on Saturday, and won by 15, I don't think Minnesota's going to have enough depth to have a really good season in the Big Ten with as many tough games as there are.
Right.
The Holland brothers look really, really good. They basically only go five deep, but they're getting, Andre and Austin Hollins look really, really good for Minnesota. I think they're probably going to be a little better than maybe we expected before the season. I'm really impressed with the job Pitino's doing so far through three games with that team.
Yeah, I mean, my only thing with them, I really need to see them against... I mean, I think winning on the road at Richmond the way that they did was obviously a good first step.
That was surprising.
Yeah.
Good call, Kyle, for pointing that out.
Yeah, absolutely. But, look, I think, as with several other teams, I mean, they've got on not this coming week, but the week after, they have Syracuse. What tournament is that in? I've forgotten now. It's okay. So they've got Syracuse in the first game of Maui, and so we'll see how that unfolds. They've got Florida State at home, and then they don't have anything else on the schedule. They don't even leave the confines of the state of Minnesota. In fact, they don't leave it, period, until they travel to Penn State on the 8th of January. So once they get back from Maui, they're pretty much home for the holidays. So I'm really curious to see what they do with Maui. I think it will be interesting. And I think the door is open right now in the Big Ten for a team to challenge for a top six spot. Because, we've talked about, there's kind of a top four in the conference with Michigan State and Wisconsin and Ohio State and Michigan, no particular order there, and then probably Iowa and Indiana in that next tier. But then it's looked like Purdue is underperforming. It looks like Illinois is going to underperform. So I think Minnesota's got a real opportunity there to sneak in and maybe sniff around the periphery of an NCAA tournament bid from an outlier.
Minnesota and Nebraska. We're going to have upper Midwest representation.
Nebraska. I'm still going with Nebraska.
Nebraska. It's not happening.
I am on the Nebraska bandwagon.
Well, there is a very interesting game this coming week, Galen. We'll get to it when we talk about Thursday, but it involves Nebraska and another
and
team
UMass.
That has a nice start in UMass.
All I'll say is this. If you look at KenPom projections, Minnesota's actually projected at 11-7 in conference right now. And granted, you got to take that with a grain of salt. Nebraska's rated at 6-12 on their projection. So I think there's still quite a bit of a overall disparity there between Nebraska
it's
and the
It's us against the world. That's all
it's
I'm saying.
All right, we'll see you guys in Indianapolis. We'll see what happens in March. But anyway, let's move forward. Let's look at some of the games we've got coming up here over the next few days. I got to tell you guys, not a lot to recommend on Monday as far as college basketball is concerned. Is one that's slightly intriguing. You've got SMU traveling to Arkansas. That game, Arkansas is obviously very hit or miss. SMU needs a road win. Last year they started off really hot coming out of the gate, and they did absolutely nothing once they got to Conference USA schedule time. It'll be really interesting to see if they can go on the road and pull off a victory against a middling SEC opponent.
It will be.
Keith Frazier's been very impressive so far, the big freshman they have coming in. He's been a very good defensive player, which nobody ever talks about that when we talk about top recruits. This is a team they haven't played in a while. That'll be their first game in a full week after blowing Rhode Island's doors off. It's a real test. This is a big game for Larry Brown's team and also for the AAC, because this is the kind of game where if SMU wants to be in consideration for the NCAA tournament, this is a game they've got to win.
Right, I agree completely.
Arkansas, they haven't really played anybody yet. I know they're 2-0, but they're not very good, I don't think.
But they've got – it's interesting because they've got – are they in Maui as well?
Is Cal in Maui? I think they are, actually.
So they've got Cal in what we think is Maui on Monday of next – not this coming week, but the week after. And Arkansas also – they also play Clemson at home.
It is in Maui. They are in Maui.
And then they've got – that's really it until the – the regular season and the SEC starts for them. So, yeah, this is going to be one of the few chances for Arkansas to pick up a decent non-conference win except for the Maui games.
And we'll see how SMU can adjust to a road environment. It's worth mentioning, SMU, not that they're exactly going to pack them in at Moody Coliseum, but they're playing the first half of their non-conference home schedule of about an hour away from campus while they finish the renovations to Moody Coliseum. They don't play a game on campus until January 4th when they rededicate the arena for UConn.
Where are they playing, actually?
They're playing in Denton. They're playing where the SWAC tournament has been the last few years.
God, I hope the video feed's better than the SWAC tournament feeds have been in the past couple of years.
Well, the key is the basketball has been much better, and they've played very well in these two games, but this is a whole different level of opponent. I'm really interested to see this SMU team on the road against the very high-pressure style in Arkansas and see how the freshman backcourt handles it.
David, two games of note for you on this day. You've got Southern Miss at North Dakota State. And you've also got Mercer at Evansville. What thoughts on either of those games?
Well, I mean, I guess North Dakota State and Southern Miss, it is one of those. They both those teams really need that because essentially for both of them, they're going to rack up bloated records, but there's not going to be any meat on it. So this is, if you want to prove that you're a fringe tournament team, then you have to be able to beat other fringe tournament teams. And if you can't, you're out. So I think, again, that's what this is. If you want to even be considered, you have to win this game. And that's for North Dakota State and Southern Miss. The other one, Mercer at Evansville. I still think Mercer's a good team. I still think they can be dangerous. I've been a little disappointed with them. I know we talked about them earlier. I actually expected them to have a much easier time with what is a bad Seton Hall team, and they didn't. They're going to have a very hard time winning at Evansville. Not that Evansville's good. It's just perhaps Mercer isn't as good as I thought they were.
Update for everybody out of Seattle. Washington has stormed back and has tied the game with Eastern Washington. There's about 8 minutes, 21 seconds left. Washington is 29 of 31 from the foul line so far in this game. So just wanted to pass that along. Kyle, as we jump forward to Tuesday of this week, big game coming up, Memphis at Oklahoma State. And this is a game, obviously, that is important for both of these teams. It's kind of a measuring stick. Thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to see this game. Oklahoma State has looked really, really impressive so far. Memphis, I've always gun-shy about them because it seems like they've lost every meaningful non-conference game the last few years, and then they end up storming through the Conference USA. Now, they're not going to have the same luxury this year in the American Athletic, but it's interesting to see how the influx of their new players, Dixon and I forget who the other guy is, but with Joe Jackson and Dixon, I feel like this Memphis team has a legitimate chance maybe to live up to a little more of the hype than they've done in the past, and it'll be great to see them. And what's interesting about this is we might get to see this game twice because they shape up, I think, to face each other in, I want to say, the semis of the Maui next week. So we could actually end up seeing this game two times.
Could be interesting. It's interesting also, if you look at Oklahoma State's resume, they're 3-0 so far. They've played pretty well, but they've played Mississippi Valley State, Utah Valley, and Arkansas Pine Bluff. So, I mean, you're talking about this is cranking
first place SWAC team, brother.
Cranking the difficulty level up considerably between Arkansas Pine Bluff and Memphis.
It is, but I mean, Oklahoma State has been in big games. At least they have people on the team that have played in big games before. Memphis loses their big games, and they run roughshod over sub-NIT teams in Conference USA. They've done little else. I am not going to be a believer in Memphis until they actually do something, so I'm with Oklahoma State big in this one. I mean, big.
Fair enough. Lee, a game a little under the radar right now, but Arizona State off to a pretty good start, again, against some pretty crappy competition, but they're 3-0. They travel to the Thomas and Mack Center to take on UNLV, a team that is not off to a great start. Got blown out at home by UC Santa Barbara, struggled at home against Nebraska Omaha on Friday. Some trouble in paradise here for the Runnin' Rebels.
Yeah, this is an absolutely huge game for Dave Rice and for UNLV. They are a team that might be in more trouble right now, a week and a half into the year, than any team in the country when you in terms of on the court. They've been a mess. They've been a team that's been very good on the inside. They've been rebounding strong. They've got, I mean, Roscoe, I've kept an eye on him because they have Roscoe Smith, the UConn transfer. He's been an absolute machine on the boards.
Yeah.
They're very strong on the inside, but on the perimeter, they have a lot of questions. I mean, outside of Olukaibe, they don't all have a whole lot to offer in terms of guard play. And, you know, Olukaibe has taken so many shots. He's bearing too much of a burden right now. And this is a team that's shooting 50% at the line. On the other end, you have an Arizona State team that, granted, they haven't really played much of anybody, but they've got the combo of Jahi Carson and Chance Murray on the perimeter, who have both been very good, strong shooters. And it's going to be an interesting contrast in styles. And this is a game where I'm fascinated to also see what the energy's like at the Thomas and Mack, because they've had such great home crowds in recent years. I wonder if they'll still have the energy for a, you know, it's a bigger name program, but Arizona State hasn't exactly done a whole lot in basketball recently other than have us laugh at Herb Sendek. And this is a game they have to have. If UNLV really wants to be a factor, if they don't want to already have questions about their stance possibly on the bubble in a few months' time, this is a game they're going to have to get. They have a huge stretch. They have Arizona State at home, and then a week from Tuesday they have Illinois at home. They've got to get wins out of those two games because they're playing two teams that are from so-called major conferences, but are probably middle-of-the-pack teams. And the Mountain West isn't nearly as good as it was last year. Those are wins that they've got to get. They've got to make those statements at home in the out-of-conference because they're going to have fewer chances in conference. It's hard for me to really make a prediction here. I do tend to stick with UNLV just because their inside game is stronger than I think Arizona State's perimeter game is. Plus, they have the home court advantage. Plus, like you said, Arizona State, I mean, they've only played UMBC, Miami, and Idaho State. Now, UMBC might be the best team in the University of Maryland system at basketball right now, but they're still not very good.
Oh, UMBC. They needed overtime to beat a Division III team that won five games last year.
I mean, UNLV struggled with Nebraska-Omaha. You would think that 4 days off of a 72-hour stretch in which they got demolished by the banana slugs of UC Santa Barbara.
No, that's the Gauchos. Slugs are UC Santa Cruz.
That's my mistake. After getting demolished by the Gauchos, and then 72 hours later needing the – I'll tell you, Nebraska-Omaha has actually played really well. They and UMass Lowell do not look like teams that have just joined Division I. I'll give kudos to both programs, but after getting – outplayed really by both those programs, you would think that this team has gone through hell in practice under Dave Rice, and they'll come out on, you know, looking to blow someone out at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night. If they don't have intensity at the opening tip, this team could be in serious trouble.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to keep an eye on that. Kyle, flashing forward to Wednesday, I know you're excited about Memphis, Oklahoma State. I would be lying if I didn't say my favorite game, the one I'm most interested in the first 3 days of this week, Iowa State at BYU.
Great game.
I love the way that both these teams play. I think BYU has a great home court advantage. They looked very good in going in and just annihilating Stanford at the beginning of this past week. They annihilated Mount St. Mary's afterwards. Iowa State, obviously, with the big win over Michigan. Just a lot of great players to watch, I feel like, for these two teams. Maybe not a lot of guys that are going to be playing in the NBA, but a lot of really good college basketball players.
Yeah, no, I love watching Iowa State's system. I mean, they space the floor as well as anybody in the country. And, you know, I got to say, like, I think before the season, I think it was Chad that had mentioned he expected BYU to win the West Coast. And although I wasn't, you know, maybe, like, we're not all terribly high on Gonzaga, I kind of rolled my eyes at that a little bit, but I gotta say, this BYU team is, they're a pleasure to watch on offense right now, and they really do kind of, you know, for all us guys that grew up in the early 90s watching college basketball, they kind of trigger some of that emotional response to seeing them, because they play like an early 90s team, and they've got that wide open attack. So this game could well reach triple digits on both sides. I really look forward to this game.
Yeah.
Possessions ahoy. I mean, there will not be – I would love to track how many possessions for both teams the shot clock reaches under 20.
Yeah.
It's got to be fewer than 15 in the game. It's going to be just fun to watch. Gail, and real quick, an under-the-radar game on Wednesday night is Bryant traveling to Harvard. You've got the prohibitive favorite in the Ivy League, potentially a top 25 team, playing against the favorite out of the Northeast Conference. I mean, it's a game Harvard should win comfortably, but it's nice to see the mid-major conferences matching up the best teams in an out-of-conference game in Boston. And, Galen,
absolutely,
it's only like a 3.5-hour drive from JFK.
I'm not going to do that.
Come on!
No, I'm not
come
driving. On. Wait a minute. 3.5-hour drive to where? To Boston?
Yes.
From JFK.
Yeah, but there's no traffic.
No, not at all. I think the last time I did that drive, it took like 5 hours, so no.
It actually is a very interesting week for Harvard in that they have the Bryant game at home, and then they travel to Colorado on Sunday. But that Bryant game could be a trap game for them. Bryant's not a bad team.
Good.
They're probably going to win the Northeast this year.
Yeah, absolutely. That should be interesting. I think that game's interesting. I think also on Wednesday, you know, you got a couple of games that could be mildly entertaining. Dayton at Georgia Tech. North Dakota State's traveling to Western Michigan. That could be a decent one. But, you know, really, I think, guys, and we're going to close off with this thought, we've got our first really major holiday tournament starting up this week. Of course, you got the 2K Sports Classic, which Lee and I will be at, sitting right next to each other as Indiana starts off against Washington and UConn plays Boston College, and then the winners of those two games and the losers, I guess, will play each other the following night. That's at Madison Square Garden.
And what? That's after you're getting back. That's after you get back from Boston. Right? Yeah,
well, no. No.
We're dispatching Galen to Boston.
I'm not driving to Boston for a damn Ivy League game. That's not happening.
It's
at
a Northeast game.
It's not going to happen.
Look, Galen, now you've left me no choice. That means I will be at the TD Bank Sports Pavilion on Wednesday night for Hampton at Quinnipiac. So, see what you've done?
That's, you know what, I can live with myself after that, believe it or not. But you've also got I believe the San Juan Shootout or the Puerto Rico Shootout, whatever the hell that's called. But that's got some interesting teams in it. The Florida State plays VCU on the first night. You've got Georgetown is in that tournament. You've got – who else is in that tournament?
Kansas State, which is a very interesting matchup.
Michigan Long Beach State is in that one as well. So there's going to be some interesting games there.
Hey, it's morning hoops, 10:30 a.m., folks.
Yeah.
Eastern time because they're in the Atlantic time zone. You've got a 10:30 a.m. tip for Charlotte K-State. Let's see which team is actually awake. That'll be fun.
And you've also got the games in Charleston with Temple, Clemson, Georgia Davidson, and UAB New Mexico, I believe, are the three.
Yeah.
And I think there's a fourth one, too.
Nebraska UMass.
That's right, Nebraska UMass.
So that's probably the best game on Thursday.
Yeah.
So
really a lot to look forward to this week, and I think it's going to be a fun week of basketball, and, of course, that leads into – there you go. That's some applause. I don't know if you heard that on the feed there, folks. But it should be a good time. Anything else that you're specifically or particularly looking forward to as we head into this week, and anything else on your mind as we close things up? Lee, let me start with you.
Basically, just it was great to see last week we talked about the Champions Classic. My takeaway from that, again, is that I thought the two best teams in the country played in the second game. I think there were some, you know, on Twitter, token, well, is Michigan State still get number one ranking after struggling with Columbia? I think Kansas is the best team in the country anyway. But it seems like the next couple of weekends, we've got some really nice tournament final possibilities coming up on Sundays. Starting with a week from today, Louisville, North Carolina will be a very interesting game, even if North Carolina is short a bunch of players and might not be that good as a result. And it seems like we're seeing an increased effort from the broadcasters around the sport to at least set up these non-conference tournaments to be, you know, viewer appealing. We're seeing a lot of really big name teams matched up together in tournaments as opposed to back in the day when you'd see one, you know, top 10 team in Maui, maybe another top 25 teams and a bunch of other schools with big names that aren't very good. You're seeing, I mean, the biggest proof of that might be that this could be the weakest Maui Invitational I remember in quite some time, but that's because the 2K Sports Classic could be good, but more so the Champions Classic. You've got the tournament in Puerto Rico is very strong. The Battle for Atlantis is strong. So my main takeaway is that the early season tournaments are just getting better and better as the broadcasters and the hosts of these tournaments who need to sell travel packages are realizing that if you want fans to come out, you've got to get the best teams. and the program seemed willing to risk an early season loss because it can make you better in March from the lessons you learn.
Right. David, thoughts before we close up?
Just a quick sentiment. A game we didn't talk about was Wisconsin went into Wisconsin-Green Bay, and it was a mud fight. It was an intense atmosphere, really good game, and I just like to see games like that. Wisconsin ended up winning. It was a big win for them. I mean, arguably, Green Bay, although not a top 25 team, is probably the best team in the horizon, and you don't see enough of that. You see some of it, and even had Wisconsin lost the game, I don't think it would have wrecked their season. I don't think it would have wrecked their program. I just don't like the attitude that we have nothing to gain by going on the road and playing a regional team or two under, you know, on equal terms. Well, you know, we have everything to lose and nothing to gain. You don't have everything to lose. Had Wisconsin lost that game, it would have been embarrassing for a day, but no one would have remembered. It wouldn't have been a defining moment in their season. And I think they did get something to gain. They had a game on television. It was a game against a quality opponent, and it was a road win against what will probably be a top 100 team. Now, those aren't things that they need, but it was something that they gained. And I just like to see games like that. I like that Wisconsin and Marquette do play Green Bay and Milwaukee. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, more of that, less of Michigan State playing at Oakland at the Palace. Like actual yeah. road games, not just road games. We're seeing this even more in college football. It's getting even worse where, like, Northern Illinois gets a home game against a Big Ten team only if they play in Chicago. Indiana and Penn State, or actually not so much Penn State, selling off home games to, like, FedEx Field. Just it's good to see. We're seeing it. It's getting worse in football.
Well, that was football. I mean that. Yeah. I mean that's a little different.
It's good to see in basketball. It kind of goes with the conference tournament thing. It seems like teams are getting a little more willing to challenge themselves,
right.
especially with the role increasing of metrics, where the value you gain from just playing a game like that, even if you lose, is better than a home loss to a team that's of quality level, because you're better off losing a road game against the top 140.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Well, to put it in perspective, a couple years ago, Morehead State beat Louisville in the NCAA tournament. Society did not collapse. Morehead State did not suddenly eclipse Louisville as a program. If you can lose that game in March, you can lose it in November.
Kyle, final thoughts.
Yeah, I just, you know, as a general observation, you know, scoring in college basketball is up, I think, 11% right now overall. So the rule, you know, the rule changes, modifications, whatever you want to call them, They seem to be, their intended effects seem to be working, and to me, you know, that makes a 35-point hideous outburst by Marquette that much more enjoyable because it's the exception rather than the rule, and that's all I ask of people is that let's not make every game 101-99. I don't like those 35-point games, but they're nice when it's not happening a lot, and I think that's you know that's what they set out to do in college basketball, and it seems to be working.
One thing I'll say in relation to that, and we mentioned this on the last show, I think, the top of Division I, has the scoring's been relatively the same as it was last year. You look at the bottom of Division I, though, the scoring's been way up. I mean, you look at the bottom 11 teams, and last year they were topping out around 84 offensive efficiency. Now you get to the bottom 11 teams, they're topping off at about a 91 efficiency. You're talking about, you know, about 0.07 of a point per possession, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it does add up when you're looking across the spectrum of college basketball. So, yeah, I think it's helped a lot. I think the games are a little more offensive, and if there's more scoring, then, hey, good. There's more scoring. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all.
Yeah, it's not easy to sell tickets when you're like Lamar or a program like that. It's really hard, though, to have, like, last year's system where it's come watch us score 60 points in a best-case scenario.
Yep.
I'd rather those small programs who are desperate for fans, I'd rather they be playing games that are 85-80 than 55-50. That doesn't help anybody.
Right. Anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for us today. Thanks, guys, as always, for your contributions. Always enjoyable. For David Griggs, for Kyle Lamb, for Lee Delvecchio, I'm Galen Clavio. Thanks for joining us on the Bracket Racket, folks. We'll be back next Sunday with a full recap of everything that went on during the past week. We'll also have shows throughout the week on HoopsHD.com. Be sure to tune in for those. We'll catch you folks on the flip side. So long, everybody.